We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run Finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
Everyone who's done some sort of home renovation knows that once you start peeling back the walls, you find things you never would have expected. But the LaJoy family found something totally out in left field when they started peeling back the walls of their home in Johnson County, Kansas in 1987. But before we find out what was found, we need the backstory of how it arrived, and that starts with Graham Rogers. Well, we're about to learn about somebody, I guess, that's new to the world of our podcast, Diane, and that's a guy named Graham Rogers. Who the heck is that?
Great name, right?
It is a great name, yes.
Would you guess he's Native American from that name?
Well, I started to read it, and I didn't realize that Graham Rogers was a Native American, but not just a Native American, a pretty important Native American in this whole story.
No, I know. We don't really, I will say, to preface this, that not that I am, my specialty is not Native American history. It's so complicated and it's very hard to research, but I couldn't resist telling this story when I discovered that there was something hiding underneath a farmhouse that's sitting in the middle of Johnson County. Who knew?
Well, what's really interesting about this whole thing is that we have Graham Rogers, who all of a sudden becomes the chief of the Shawnee Native Americans, the Shawnee Indians at the time, and somehow ends up here in the middle of Kansas, ends up in Oklahoma, but like his house is still like legitimately being lived in today, which we'll get to in a second. How does Graham Rogers end up as the chief of the Shawnee Indians?
It's kind of an interesting backstory, and it takes us to, of course, the really sad history of the relocation of Native American tribes in general. So Johnson County was originally the home of the Kansas tribes in the Osage, right? But then in 1830, the government actually removed the Shawnee from lands in Ohio and in Missouri. And of course, that's going to delay white settlement in Kansas territory because now we've just allocated it to the Native Americans. Like we need the land in Ohio where it's more expensive, and even Missouri at this point. So we need you to move. And that's what happened. And so essentially, we have to remember that following the Native American tribes was definitely going to be a bunch of missions too, missionaries. And that gets into, of course, Johnson County's history as well. And, you have to wonder how much trust they had in the United States government too. And the trust that they had in these treaties that they made. So the Shawnee, which is, obviously namesake of a lot of things in Johnson County, originally lived in Ohio, Kentucky, Pennsylvania, and South Carolina. And then one group, a really interesting group, which is, I love the backstory on this, in 1793-ish, gets a little land grant from Spain. Like they're done. So they're going to split from like the other Shawnee tribes. And they settle near Cape Girardeau. Right. It's kind of crazy. And the rest moved to Ohio in 1817. So this Missouri settlement, there was about 8 Shawnee settlements in the state of Missouri between, and of course it was even territory at this point, between 1793 and 1825. And one of them, the one that we're going to talk about, is Rogerstown. And they were moved, I'm not going to say they're nomadic. They probably kept getting kicked off the land, to be honest with you. They were moved several times, but they end up, I don't know if you know where Bridgeton is outside of St. Louis. At one point, they're in Bridgeton. I used to, when I was a wine rep, that's where our office was in Bridgeton. And then they end up settling on the Merrimack River. Of course, that makes sense. And to be clear, I think that we have a really a misrepresentation or a misconstrued notion, probably from the not so PC days. Did you ever make the little Native American hat when you were a kid? Mm-hmm. The little band. Okay. We always think like Native American. I'm thinking like, that's what this is like. These guys were really domesticated. So they're going to have a domesticated life and a domesticated tribe. So they had log homes, interracial schools, livestock. They were trading with the Delaware. They were hunting in the winter and, farming in the summer. So they were a lot more domesticated than other tribes. And so that means they, you know, they intermingled, if you will, too. So that's what happens to this guy. So, and it's a really weird story. And I've heard it and looked at it. And I mean, I'm telling you, it's got to be true because I'm looking at these. I mean, we're talking like way ancestors from all over the place. They all have been told the same story. And that gives some credence to this story. So essentially around 1778, the chief of this tribe, the Blackfish, okay, Chief Blackfish, they're the fish band of the tribe. He apparently loses his son. His son was killed. I don't know how, but he, you know, so he's looking for a replacement. It's like he lost his cell phone.
Yeah, right. It sounds like it. I read that in your article and kind of doing some background on this. And like he needed a son. So he just basically went out there and found a guy and said, you're going to be my son. Yeah.
Found a white kid and supposedly kidnapped him from his house and decided, yep, you're my kid now, and raised him. And the kid, and this would have been the essentially the descendant of the Rogers clan. And so he grew up with the Shawnee. He relocated west of the Mississippi River prior to 1794. So this is going to be Rogers Town. Mm-hmm. Chief Blackfish, whether he had another son or not, chose Lewis, essentially Rogers, to take over. And Native American tribes at the time, really, it was ancestral is how they decided who was going to lead them. It was not like by, you know, let's vote or anything like that. And so Lewis ends up, you know, kind of being groomed for this role. And what's interesting is I think Lewis knew, this is Lewis Rogers. He knew he was kidnapped, I'm assuming. I mean, maybe he forgot. I don't know. But it must have been a little awkward when his sister, who would have not been blood related, he decided he wanted to marry her. Sister's like, this is my brother. And she apparently didn't realize that he had been kidnapped. Long story short, he ends up marrying his.
They get married. Hey, congratulations.
That's got to be a little weird.
Yeah, I would think a little weird, but because of that, then they have a kid, and now all of a sudden the heir to the chief of the Shawnee is this kid Graham Rogers, and you're looking at him going, wait a second here. Well, there's got to be something that got lost in history.
You know, I mean, I'm telling you, I've read this story through Native American tribes. I've read this story through the ancestors of the guy who was kidnapped, Lewis Rogers, and the story they have, which is interesting too. So Lewis marries and they have like five kids. Mm-hmm. One of them is Graham, and he's born around 1818. And around this time, his brother, his blood brother, I don't know how he found him. How do you find anybody back then? I mean, it's not like the Native Americans were reading the newspaper. I don't know how they found him, but they found Lewis, and he's like, Mom really wants to see you, whatever. So Lewis goes back to Virginia, where he was kidnapped. He goes back to Virginia and sees his mom for the first time ever. He's a grown man, has a family, you know. I mean, he's dressed like a Native American at this point. Still can speak English, of course. And Mom tries to convince him to desert his family and stay. And Lewis is like, I can't do that. I have a sons. I have family I'm going to raise. So he left in the middle of the night and never turned back.
Yeah, never came back, which I probably would do as well. I mean, you know, you were kidnapped how many years prior? You're not with this family anymore. You're part of a new life, which has become your life. Now, I would have to say, these folks that I haven't seen in 30 years, however long it's been, sorry, nice knowing you, but I'm going back out to Kansas.
Right. Well, and this one, he's in Missouri. Remember, they're on the Merrimack River. And so he ends up going to Rogerstown and goes back and never looks back, which, of course, leaves this these legendary stories of, of both. You can imagine the white family is just like, what? So that story definitely got passed down. At the same time, we have these guys who are trying to cash in. I hate to say it, but these missionary men, a lot of them were trying to cash in on the Native American lands, you know, trying to work out deals with them so they could settle on the land. And essentially, you know, help indoctrinate the Native Americans, if you will. One of them, of course, was Thomas Johnson, the namesake of Johnson County. And he is going to be the one who runs the Shawnee Indian Mission. He actually was, even before he settled into Kansas territory, he met with Rogerstown Shawnees and was like, hey, what do you think? Hey, you know, and they're like, sure, you should set up a mission. So essentially, they're one of the first bands that comes, the Shawnee. They relocate into Kansas territory in 1830. And they come over along with Thomas Johnson. He sets up his first mission in Turner, Kansas. So like near Argentine, you know, by the river.
Sure.
And that, you know, they're, he's going to educate the Native Americans. The Quakers come in 1836 and they build a two-story structure, and then followed by Baptists. You get the idea. Well, so then the Bands of Shawnee, it's about 2,200 people. It's not that many. Think about that. It's really not that many. They're given, I want to make sure, you, and all relocated into the area by 1834, and they're given 1.6 million acres.
That's a lot of land for 2,200 people, isn't it?
It sure is. But I mean, at this point, they don't think that anything else is going to really happen. You know, they're not thinking ahead. You
right.
know, government wasn't thinking ahead. So Thomas Johnson's able to secure his mission. He relocates 3 miles from Westport on the Santa Fe Trail, which of course is today's 53rd and Mission Road. Three buildings are standing. So we have all these guys that are moving in, including these chiefs from other tribes, and including, so we have Fish Band. That's the chief Blackfish. That's going to be Graham Rogers' people, if you will. They come with 100 people with Graham Rogers, and they arrived the earliest, 1828. And then Frederick Choteau, he takes another band from the another area of the, I think it was from the Missouri area. Frederick Choteau is the brother of Francois Choteau, who is, of course, one of the founders of Kansas City, if you will. Mm-hmm. And then the other bands arrived in Ohio, led by Tecumseh's younger brother, the Prophet. He wasn't all right in the head. He came in 1833, and also the future chief, Charles Blue Jacket. So you have all of these guys coming in. Now, you got to remember, they all have their own chiefs. So mm-hmm. we're probably going to have some issues. But honestly, it became pretty friendly. You know, they're like reuniting. They're all kind of related. You know, they're all related.
Right, sure.
What up? So in any case, so Thomas Johnson is going to entrust, you know, especially half-breeds. And I hate to say it that way, but, you know, Graham Rogers was a half-breed. So he was half white, half Native American. And so he's going to build his buildings in this new mission spot, which I think there were total over 20 buildings originally. One of the first buildings is the West Building, built in 1839. He gets his own kiln on property so they can fire their own brick. Mm-hmm. They build that for the teachers' quarters and the classrooms. Then they build the East Building, which is 1840, classrooms, a chapel. And I think that's where the boys' quarters were. And then in by early 1840s, they have 16 buildings, and it's a massive, massive operation. His whole goal is to charge Native Americans to send their kids to the mission, basically. And it employed by Thomas Johnson is none other than Graham Rogers. And he is considered to be one of the men that built the buildings. So he probably learned something about construction, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, building these pretty sturdy structures and all of this. And so he ends up building his own two-story dog trot log cabin. And a dog trot log cabin, do you see the picture of one?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. But I mean, people listening aren't going to, you know, maybe if they go back and check out the article, you know, see what you're talking about.
Look like.
Describe this cabin, you know?
Well, yeah, it's a very interesting cabin. So it's going to be a two-story is really unique. Usually it's one story. So essentially, it would be usually you had your kitchen quarters on one side and then you had your living quarters on the other side, and it was joined together. The building would have been joined together with a roof, if you will. And then there'd be a breezeway in between. That would be the dog trot. And that was actually for breeze, for circulation, and also for safety. Think about it, because if your kitchen catches on fire, it's not
you don't want the whole house to go up.
Yeah, you don't want the whole house to go up in flames. So this is a two-story dog trot. And which is very interesting because those are not as common. So he builds this beautiful two-story, it was very impressive, log cabin.
I bet at the time this thing probably was the toast of the town, you know?
It was 100%. Oh, I mean, because most Native Americans, I mean, not to say that they were roughing it, but, you know, get the teepee out of your head. These are domesticated Native Americans, but they didn't necessarily have the funds, right, to build something like this, but he had developed relationships with the rich white folk. So essentially he was able to, you know, get a lot of money down to it. So he ends up with five people living in this structure. And he gets married a little bit later in his life. The time period, he ends up getting married to a lady named Anna Carpenter, who's also a half-breed. She is born in 1830, and they get married in 1850 at the Shawnee Indian Mission, Thomas Johnson. So she moves in with a log cabin. And then there's kind of I think I always thought that chiefs, and it's different with each tribe, but I always thought that chiefs just like were chief until they died. And
yeah, right.
Well, that was originally probably the case with that the succession through sons. Mm-hmm. But Blue Jacket wanted to have the chief of the Shawnee be passed on by birth, so sons. Rogers said, we should all vote. We're all coming from different areas. We should all vote. It should be a democratic vote.
Right.
Rogers won. And so he was actually, it was the first time that the Shawnee were selected the best man for the job, not by birth. And in 1851, Graham Rogers is elected second chief. So like VP.
Yeah.
He's like VP.
I want to go back to something that I kind of find fascinating before we continue on. And maybe this is oversimplification of it, Diane, but it sure seems like the Shawnee were a lot more tolerable and accepting of us than we were of them back in the time. It seems like the Shawnee welcomed in the white man while the white man was trying to push the Shawnee tribe further and further west and further south every chance they got. Why was that?
Part of it was the domestication prior to. So you have the idea that they were already adopting into Christianity. They were already had these relationships with missions. They were already educating their kids, teaching their kids English. So it was easier for them to accept these people than it was mm-hmm. the Osage. The Osage were like not playing.
Yeah, right. Yeah, you hear the stories about the Osage and how awful the white man were to the Osage Indian tribes back in the day, and even going down to Oklahoma and seeing what they have, where the Pioneer Woman is and visiting her town in Pawhuska and seeing the Osage Indian tribe and just how awful, they were treated back in the day by the white man moving in and taking their land.
And taking their culture.
Too. Yeah.
And I think that it's sad that we live in a society, and I mean, I'm without getting political, but we live in a society that thinks that we have to have other people adapt to us. And, we didn't begin that, or we should have never begun that way. Mm-hmm. And with Native American tribes, they wouldn't give them a good land grant if they didn't trust that they were going to do what they said, which part of it was to assimilate. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're not going to do that, which is why the Osage got pushed out so quickly. I mean, they were like not playing. And other tribes, Delaware were another one that were more willing to, and the Delaware were closely related to the Shawnee tribe. So they got along well. And so you don't want to like pair up with a tribe and have Native American lands next to tribes that don't get along. So all of that played in. And the people that were making the decisions were the white men who were also representing the chiefs. So it wasn't like there wasn't white men helping make this decision. And Thomas Johnson had his nose all in this too. Of course he did, because it directly affected his, government land, if you will, too.
Right.
And I mean, it doesn't take, all of a sudden they realize Graham Rogers settled on, there was no acclimation of land. It was like, here's your land. It's not like, the tribe decided where you were going to live. They kind of just settled where they were going to settle, so families settled next to each other and things like that. So there wasn't like platted out pieces of land yet. And Graham Rogers, by the time we get to white people moving in, so Kansas territory opens up for settlement because led by Thomas Johnson, they went to Washington, D.C. with the chiefs and leaders of the tribe, including Graham Rogers, and they negotiated the land they already owned. Think about that. Mm. They negotiated the land they were already given. So it was already like, we're going to take this from you, but we need to figure out what we're going to do. And so the agreement was originally 1.6 billion acres. And this is what, 20 years later-ish, 25 years later, they whittled it down to 200,000 acres.
Wow.
1.6 million to 200,000 acres. And not only that, but now we're moving white folk in. And so your family doesn't feel safe. No, nobody's really sure. There's this slavery thing going on at the border. Like there's all sorts of stuff going on. It's like, maybe we should move,
Yeah.
And so Graham, the first time, so the 1855, the government said, we have to, if you're going to get your 200 acres, because that's what they were going to give you. Like, okay. If you're going to get your 200 acres, you have to sign over essentially your rights. Like there's no more claiming of land and all of this. So Graham Rogers and his wife and he had a daughter at this point, are able to secure 600 acres, 200 acres a kid. And they live in their land originally was from 63rd Street to 71st, I-35 to Metcalf Avenue. Okay.
That's a big trek of land right there.
Well, he started with 600, but as the Native Americans started to say, here, I'll buy that land, he's like, I'll buy it from you, because they started to leave. They didn't want to stay around. So he went from 600 to 1,000 acres by purchasing himself. Okay. So, and then he also had his neighbor, you know, his mother-in-law, she lived at Antioch Park, you know, I mean, like these Native Americans were right here. And there's a actually really cool is that his wife's mom, so his mother-in-law had a painting done of her. She's one of only, I think it's six Shawnee that actually have like artistic drawings of them done in 1830.
Wow.
And one of them, of course, was the prophet, and another was her mom. And she was, you know, married to a white man. So, I mean, like the history that just oozes in this area is just unbelievable.
And you think about it
now, and you're just like, oh my, and this, we're just getting into white people moving in. And it's like, this guy's already had a cabin built. If you can consider this, by the time he's got his 1858, he's been on that land for almost at least 20 years.
Right. Because
he might not have started with that dog trot two-story log cabin. I mean, it's unbelievable.
So he builds this house, has all this land, and here comes the government again, basically telling him, we're taking this away from you. You now have to move to Oklahoma.
Yeah, well, it was a choice. You got to remember that when he was given that land, he had a choice. He could have, if he didn't want to conform, if you will, then he wouldn't have been given the land. So he made a choice here's the thing, in 1859, like seriously, it could not be the worst time for Kansas Territory, right? Right. The civil rights, border war stuff, just to the north of him was, Charles Blue Jacket. And, during the border wars and even into the Civil War, his neighbor just to the north, Charles Blue Jacket was supposedly an underground, a station on the Underground Railroad. Uh-huh. And so the bushwhackers were nailing them right and left. And so I know that Graham Rogers applied to the government to try to reclaim $2,500 in property loss and never got it. And by the way, his kids tried to get it and they never got it. So this was getting hostile. And then also, you know, you've got the white people moving in and they're like, hey, look, we don't even have to build a structure. Look what this guy's got.
You know, right. So they just basically tried to take it from this guy.
So, yeah. So essentially he has got three kids by this time, and he was elected the actual Shawnee chief in 1859. Right. Mm-hmm. And it's really cool because a drawing, there's this passerby who was writing in a diary. It's a book now. And he wrote about his experience, you know, talking to Native Americans, and he actually went to Graham Rogers' house and he sketched the dog trot cabin in 1859, which is so cool. And so they just decided it's time to move. You got to remember, he's the leader of the pack. So some people had already moved, and then the rest of them were like, what are we going to do, chief?
Right.
Like, I think it's time to go. So essentially in 1865, his farm is valued at $14,000.
That's a lot of money back then, I would imagine.
A lot of money. I'll talk figures. Yeah. About that in a second. He's got three kids. It's time to go. So they're going to move to Oklahoma. The Cherokee Nation had welcomed them and said, Shawnee, you can come down and live with us. And they're like, cool, let's go. And so in 1866, he's elected head chief again. And he decides to sell his property. So July 1868, I believe it is the first time that he sells a portion of his land. And he sells the two-story log cabin and 520 acres to a guy named Henry Coppock, which we'll talk about later, for $18,200, which is equivalent to about $350,000 a day. That's actually a pretty good deal.
Yeah.
For that land. Like, can you imagine? I mean, and then, you know, the white settlement had really moved in, and this Henry Coppock decides to, and this goes into, and we'll go back to Graham in a second, but he isn't going to just leave a dog trot log cabin. He wants something a little bit nicer. So instead of building, you know, tearing it down and starting at the foundation, why not build around it?
Yeah, sure. Build around it.
And what was hidden for so long.
Right. And so Henry Coppock, who we'll talk about more in our next episode of this, yeah, builds, I guess, essentially a house around a house. And in 1987, we all do with home construction, you start peeling one thing back of the wall.
Can you imagine?
All of a sudden, this falls apart, that falls apart, this is not working, that's not working. I've never done home construction where I started to peel things back, Diane, and saw another house underneath my walls. That must have been the biggest surprise Is it the LaJoy family back in 1987 who are peeling back the walls and going, oh my God, what do we have here?
It's crazy story because, and I love that because it's, it's like, where's my insulation? I have logs. And it's actually a cool story. So after Graham Rogers left, he died pretty quickly, just to kind of sum that up. And it's very sad because we don't know where he's buried, which we'll talk about that here in a second again too. But so when he dies, and Henry Coppock builds what we'll talk about next time, but is Oak Park Farm. Hilarious that it's called that. And essentially this house is still standing at 6741 Mackey. Please remember it's private property, people. So in any case, in 1987, the Ike and Nancy LaJoy are looking for, he was from Atchison, Kansas. And he's like, I really want a house that's, you know, like kind of feels like a farm. And his realtor's like, I think I might have something for you. So she takes him into this subdivision, and at the end of a dead end of a street, there's a reason there's a dead end there because it was originally obviously a lot larger. Is this white frame farmhouse. And it looks just, I mean, if I were looking at it, I'd go 1880 for sure, you know, from the looks of it, two story white house, whatever. So he buys they buy the house. And about a year later, there's this amateur historian named Jerry Winkleman. He was a real estate agent. He's like practically digging through their trash. Like I'm kidding, but he was like just snooping around their property one day. And Ike's like, can I help you? The guy's like, hey, I have a feeling that your house is a lot older than you think. And he's like, what do you mean? So he starts telling him about Graham Rogers. And Ike is a curious cat and his wife as well. And they both love history. And they're like, well, let's see what happens. Where should we start? And so they knew that the dog trot would have been in the center of the home, which is where the staircase is today. I was very lucky to, of course, go and visit and see it for myself. So they look in the center construction made sense. So they went up to a top bedroom that they weren't using at that point, and they just started peeling away the wallpaper and peeling away the plaster. And what the hell? All of a sudden, it's not just logs. It's like there's still bark on the logs, if that tells you anything.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh, this is way older than we thought. And then when they look into the records, it's like 1840. And I mean, I've just never heard of anything like this before. So I asked when I was there, because I have loved basements. Basements tell you everything you need to know about an old home. Seriously, not just leaks. They tell you a lot, especially about additions and basements. So I was like, he goes, you want to see our basement? I was like, yeah. So I go downstairs. And if you look up in the ceiling, I mean, it is full on, like the guy, like Grandma Rogers cut the trees down, left the bark on, stuck them up there.
And so how come they didn't notice that there was something like not right about that? Like if I went down to my basement and saw trees down there, I'd be like, what in the heck is this?
They noticed that part. They did notice that part, but you have to remember you could have.
They just assumed it was old and that was just like the charm.
Yeah. In a frame structure. So you figure, oh, well, maybe they removed a lot of trees from the area and they used that as the support beams in the house. You just leave it at that. You're not going to think your whole freaking house is one big log cabin when it's like literally a frame house.
Yeah.
And so that's when they realized that obviously it was a lot older than they thought. And I think it goes to say, I always say this because I could tell 1,000 stories in Kansas City about us screwing up and tearing stuff down. I think that part of the reason this got saved is because it was so tucked away. And because it doesn't blend with the subdivision at all.
I was going to say the subdivision I looked at on like Google Earth, it's like, you know, split level houses, like your typical Johnson County, you know, North Johnson County suburbs and suburban street. And then all of a sudden there's just like this gorgeous, like white farmhouse that looks like it just doesn't belong, you know?
Yeah. And then the thing is what doesn't belong are those
other houses.
You're right. And I think that when I say incredibly lucky, and there's a backstory in the 1950s of how the house kind of, I'm going to say saved, but kind of escaped demo. And you can tell because the street doesn't go all the way through. It kind of ends. There's no cul-de-sac. It just kind of like ends. Mm-hmm. And that's partially because I'm sure eventually they thought they'd plow through and then the other land around it became commercial versus residential. But I think it gives me some hope that there are other structures that I still don't know about that you can imagine my shock. I'm like, I know all about this Kansas City's history and what is this? How did I not know about this? Well, partially because it's not on the National Register. it isn't really broadcast out there because it's a private residence, but and that could be dangerous. But in the case, it fell into the right owner's hands because they've done nothing but try to preserve and embrace this incredible history, especially for someone who was a chief of the Shawnee and got basically relocated without wanting to relocate and doesn't even have a grave, right? And the other thing that bothers me about this, his wife dies, and this is Graham Rogers, his wife dies in 1871 and he dies in 1872, left very young children. Is his oldest daughter married but never had kids. His son died of tuberculosis when he was like 30, didn't have any kids. And his daughter, the last daughter, Rachel, was a Diane. She was a spinster. She was a teacher and never married. And so the line died out. And I think that always makes me really sad because I think about the legacy of something. And the fact that Graham Rogers actually stayed somewhat in the history books, even though he doesn't have that legacy. And yes, we don't know where he's buried. We know where his kids are buried. We don't know where he's buried, but he left behind a structure that's still standing in Johnson, in the heart of Overland Park. And how amazing is that?
It's pretty wild to think that for well over 100 years, a house was inside a house and no one knew it existed. In our next episode, we'll meet two former owners of the home who almost made it disappear.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.